Hi, and welcome to NC State's Audio Abstract. I'm your host, Tracy Peek. Today we're going to be speaking with Kobe Shaw, who is the Blanton J. Whitmire Distinguished Professor of Entomology at NC State. He specializes in urban entomology, insect behavior, and chemical ecology. Today we're going to be talking about termites. Welcome, Kobe.
Good to be with you.
Glad to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about termites. In your recent work, you were talking about termite pheromones, which is something that you study in a number of insects, including cockroaches. Speaking of cockroaches, here's a little known fact or something I didn't know until recently. Cockroaches and termites are actually kind of related.
They're quite related. We think of termites as social cockroaches, in fact. Many people tend to, based on the way they look, they think that termites are related to ants, but they're actually quite distant from an evolutionary perspective. Millions of years separate them. So the cockroaches evolved about 250 million years ago, and about 50 to 100 million years later, the termites evolved from within the cockroaches. And that's why we think of termites as social cockroaches. Termites are strictly social. Cockroaches are, many of the cockroaches are solitary, but the termites evolved from within the solitary cockroaches.
And let's talk a little bit about termite society. I mean, part of the reason that we think termites are similar to ants is because they seem to behave in a lot of the same ways. They have nests together, and they have a queen, but termites have a king, and that makes them kind of unique, doesn't it?
Yes, termites are really quite different. They have what we refer to as convergent evolution. So termites and ants and wasps and bees have converged on a very similar social structure, but they have done so independently. That is, and termites preceded the ants and bees and wasps in developing this social system. So in termites, we have workers, we have soldiers, and we have the royals, which are the royal caste, which is a queen and a king. In other social insects, like the ants, wasps, and bees, we only have a queen. In the spring, usually, there are drones that are generated. Those are the males. But the drones are very transient in those colonies. The drones leave the colony and go on mating flights to mate with new queens from other colonies. So the drones don't really serve any function within the colony in which they're born. Whereas in termites, the king remains with the queen for life. And the king continues to provide sperm for that queen, and that can go on for many, many years, for dozens of years actually.
So termites can live for dozens of years.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Now I know that termites also swarm, so they do the mating flights as well. What happens with those swarming termites? Do they go and found other colonies elsewhere?
Exactly. So different colonies give rise to what are called alates. Those are reproductives, both queens, future queens and future kings that have wings. They fly out of the colonies. And this is sort of a way to prevent inbreeding within the colony. So both males and females leave the colonies. They find each other. They land on the ground. The male kind of follows the female until they hit the right spot. They bore into wood, and then they shed their wings. They drop their wings, and now they're permanently together as a monogamous pair. They mate. The female then becomes a queen. She starts laying eggs. The eggs then, what emerges from the males, from the eggs are going to be all workers and soldiers. And the queen remains, so she monopolizes reproduction. She's the only reproducing member in that colony.
Okay, so literally one pair of termites gives rise to an entire colony.
Precisely, yes. Now, and when the colony gets very, very large, there can be what can happen is that satellite colonies will form of that main colony, and those satellite colonies may have their own king and queen as well. It becomes very complex because some of these colonies can cover a very, very large area. And the farther the workers are from the reproductive from the royals, the more likely these workers are to be released from the inhibition of the royal pheromones and start reproducing themselves. And so you get these satellite colonies that have their own satellite reproductives.
So let's talk a little bit about the pheromones. So you said if a colony is big enough, a worker can get released from the effect of the royal pheromones. What does that mean exactly? Do those pheromones have a dampening effect on the other termites in the colony?
Yeah, so we usually think of pheromones as chemicals that release a behavior. So the most typical pheromones are sex pheromones, sex attractant pheromones. We've heard of these moths, for example, where the female emits a pheromone and the male can find the pheromone from a kilometer away. And those pheromones release a behavior in a male, cause the male to navigate towards the female. But there's another set of pheromones that are referred to as primer pheromones. And these are pheromones that change the physiology rather than the behavior of the animal. So in all social insects, the royal caste, say the queen, produces a pheromone that allows the workers, other members of the colony, to recognize her. And those are the behavioral type pheromone. They release a behavior. But the royals, the queen, also releases a pheromone that suppresses reproduction in the workers. And that's the so-called primer pheromone. It's a pheromone that has a physiological effect that causes the workers not to reproduce. When you remove the queen from the colony, first of all, the recognition pheromone is gone, and the workers are going, "Where's my queen?" But at the same time, the workers are released from the inhibition of not reproducing and begin to reproduce.
With termites, the workers could be male or female?
The sex determination system in the Hymenoptera, the ants, bees, and wasps, is quite different from the sex determination system in termites. So in termites, all eggs are fertilized, and all eggs can give rise to either males or females. So the workers in the termite colony are both males and females. The male workers, some of the male workers, when released from the inhibition of the royals, the males can give rise to kings. And when female workers are released from the inhibition of the queen, they can give rise to a new queen.
Okay, so they don't have to be specially hatched or anything like that. They can just be there,
right.
And that pheromone goes away, and suddenly you can have a new queen and a new king.
Exactly. So we refer to it as a very plastic pathway, developmental pathway. That is, it has a lot of flexibility in it. It depends on the environmental factor. The genetics remains the same, but the environment can regulate the developmental pathway.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. So on your latest work, you were talking specifically about the pheromones released by these queens and kings. Is there a special one that the king emits as well, or is the queen's pheromone kind of in charge of everything? Can we tell if the king has his own pheromone and what it might be doing?
So the species that we worked on is called Reticulatermes flavipes. It's a mouthful. It's called the eastern subterranean termite, and it's common throughout North Carolina, of course, but throughout Southeast the United States. But you know how we often complain about invasive species coming to the U.S. and doing economic damage. Well, this is one of those species that started here, and we have exported all over the world. So it now occurs in Europe, it occurs in Asia, South America, and actually has migrated all the way to California now. So it's doing billions of dollars of damage worldwide.
So not really an export for us to be proud of, but there it is.
Other countries may start a tariff on our export of termites.
Termites, indeed.
So in theory, the male and female must have different pheromones in terms of this primer effect. They must have different pheromones because the male's pheromone needs to be directed to males and the female's pheromone needs to be to suppress the developmental pathway of females. But in terms of recognition, these are the sort of the behavioral pheromone. The evidence that we have from this recent work is that both the queen and the king have the same recognition pheromone. And so it makes sense that the workers and soldiers recognize royals as a caste. They don't necessarily recognize the queen as a queen and a king as a king behaviorally, so because they need to tend to them in the same way. They need to feed them, they need to protect them, they need to groom them. And so they treat both royals in sort of the same way.
Okay, so the king may have his own special pheromone that prevents the males in the colony from being able to reproduce, but they both have a recognition pheromone, which
exactly.
means that everybody else in the colony knows these two are the most special.
Yeah, it's sort of like a football team needs to be able to recognize the quarterback, right? You need to know who is who within a colony. From the basic biology perspective, it's really interesting to see that these compounds that we identified, they're so wax-like compounds. They're on the surface of the insect. These wax-like compounds develop millions of years ago, millions of years before they developed in the ants and wasps and bees. So it gives us some insight into the evolution of pheromonal communication systems.
I'm interested a little bit in these pheromones are a waxy covering on the termite's body.
Yes, they are. So all insects have wax on their surface. Remember, the insects have an exoskeleton. We have an internal skeleton, our skeletal system, our bones. They have an external skeleton. It's a cuticle that covers their whole body. But they are very susceptible to desiccation. All insects are very susceptible to desiccation, to dehydration, to loss of water, because they're small, and so their surface-to-volume ratio is quite large. There's a lot of evaporation that can take place through the cuticle. So they have solved this problem millions of years ago by putting a wax-like covering over the cuticle. It's much the same way that if you go to the supermarket, we try to preserve apples, for example, by putting wax covering on them. So the apple lasts longer because it doesn't lose water in the supermarket. Well, we've learned something from insects. That's exactly what insects have done for hundreds of millions of years. And some of these wax-like substances have then they evolved to protect the insect from desiccation and protect the insects from pathogenic microbes. But then the insects evolved to use these compounds for secondary functions. And one of those secondary functions is communication. So in other insects, not just social insects, we see these compounds being used for sex recognition, for aggregation, to drive aggregation, for all sorts of behaviors.
And in terms of them being able to recognize the pheromones, do termites have what we would consider noses? How do they take up this scent or pheromone? How do they detect it?
Yeah, so all insects have antennae, and the antennae have the equivalent of our nose, but much more complicated. Because the antennae can smell, the antennae can taste, the antennae can sense heat, differences in temperature and different, so they have heat receptors. In some insects, they have ways of detecting magnetic orientation. So the antennae have a lot of sensory structures that allow the insect to sense the environment. But the most important role for the antennae is smell, olfaction.
Okay, so if you see a termite, I mean, do they just walk up to another termite and, like, tap them with their antennae? Is that...
That's exactly what they do, and this is one of the basis for our discovery here. Because what one has to do in order to identify pheromones is you have to interrogate the termite. Well, how do you interrogate the termite? You have to ask it a question and get an answer, right? And so we developed something called a bioassay. A bioassay is where we measure the response of a biological system. In this case, it's a behavioral assay where we offer the termite something and look at its behavior. Okay. And one of the behaviors that we looked at, the critical behavior we looked at, was shaking. So in the presence of a queen or in the presence of a king, the termite workers shake like crazy. But the other thing that they do is antennate. They use their antennae to tap the other members of the colony very rapidly. In the presence of the queen pheromone, antennation, both shaking and antennation increase tremendously.
Okay. So this may be kind of a weird and obvious question, but why are they shaking?
I wish we knew. So different animals respond to pheromones differently. And you look at the animal kingdom, and these responses are incredibly diverse. In some cases, they shake. In some cases, they tremulate. They do sit-ups. They do stand-up. They do all sorts of behaviors. So we don't know what the meaning of the shaking is, and we suspect that there are different types of shaking. This will require quite a bit of work with high-speed photography, high-speed video, to determine whether they shake differently in different contexts. But the important thing was that there's a very clear response to the queen with increased shaking. And so this gave us something to measure as we started isolating the pheromone. Eventually, you want to use a synthetic version of the pheromone to apply to a substrate so you can control everything else. You can control the queen's behavior because we can apply the substrate. We can apply this pheromone to a glass dummy. And the workers respond to this pheromone on a glass dummy by shaking. And that tells us they're recognizing the glass dummy as a queen.
As a queen. So you know that you've isolated the correct pheromone.
Exactly.
Did the king have one that you could detect in this work as well?
Yes, we did. So we can extract both the king and the queen with solvents and then process them through what's called gas chromatography, mass spectrometry. It's a process, analytical chemistry that identifies what compounds we extracted from their cuticular surface. So we did that, and we found this one compound in both kings and queens. It's extremely difficult to work with kings because they're not very common. They're smaller in a colony. It's very difficult to find them in the colony.
Did workers shake in the presence of the king pheromone as
Absolutely,
well?
Yes.
Wow. Well, what does this mean then? I know most people, when they think about termites, are more interested in termite control. We would prefer that the king and queen don't take up residence in our basement or our porches or anywhere else. So by studying these pheromones, what can we learn about these insects and how we might be able to get them to maybe move far, far away from our homes?
Yeah, so I think these types of findings and these types of investigations have implications both to the basic biology of insects as well as to the control of insect pests. From the sort of economic perspective, the applied perspective, we feel that some of these pheromones, because the workers pay attention to these pheromones and the workers always want to be around these pheromones, that it may be possible to take some of these pheromones and put them into a bait system that contains an insecticide. And the workers feed on the wood that's contained in the bait, take up the insecticide, and then can deliver it back to the reproductive, back to the queen and back to the king. And therefore, we might be able to control colonies much more effectively by having a pheromone to direct workers to the bait.
Well, thank you very much, Kobe. We've been talking with Kobe Shaw, the Blanton J. Whitmire Distinguished Professor of Entomology here at NC State. I'm Tracy Pink. Thanks for listening to Audio Abstract.